Good morning, everyone. I call this regular meeting of the North Dakota Public Service Commission to order. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of the Commission. I'm joined today by Commissioner Crosius and Commissioner Fedorchak, so we have a quorum. And it is 10:03 on Wednesday, September 6, 2017. My only opening comments would be regarding the president in coming to town today, and we'll be over at the Andeavor Refinery now, formerly the Tesoro Refinery. And I just have to say, I think North Dakotans of all political persuasions ought to be excited about any time a president takes time. It's a big effort. They fly in vehicles. There's advanced security work, all this type of thing. And over the years of my lifetime, I've seen nationally prominent Republicans who take North Dakota for granted, nationally prominent Democrats who kind of write us off. It's refreshing when a president is concerned and interested in North Dakota and other rural states that are sometimes considered flyover country. My mother, who's passed away but was really a great American patriot, and she used to tell and had just loved to tell the story about when she was a teenage girl and my grandparents took her up to Pick City to see President Eisenhower. And so it has an impact on young people and causes them to think about their government in ways that maybe they otherwise wouldn't. And so it's a great opportunity. I hope people, as I said, regardless of political persuasions, to make the most of this opportunity. Commissioner Crashers?
Well, good morning. I would echo the same thoughts. Anytime you have a sitting U.S. president that comes to visit your state and express an interest in what you're doing, that's a really good thing. I had the privilege of being able to also witness a previous president that also came and visited here in Bismarck, President Obama. And it's, you know, I couldn't agree with you more, Randy. It's not about political persuasion, but it's recognizing that the presidency represents, it's just a key part of our democracy. And it is arguably the most powerful position in the world. So it's good that the president is coming today. I hope he gets a really good look at not just the refinery, but that component of our energy industry, because it's so important to the state. So I look forward to being out there and participating as a spectator, of course. So, it's a very big day for Bismarck-Mandan, and it's a very big state for our very big day for North Dakota.
Well, I'll have a little story to share. I'm going out there too, and I'm bringing my daughter Elizabeth, and she is a sophomore at St. Mary's High School. And when she was a kindergartner, First Lady Bush came to Bismarck, and they were looking for a class to greet her at the airport. And my connections with Ed Schaefer, and he was a sitting secretary, so his staff called me and said, "Can you help us?" And I said, "Sure, I know of a class." And so when she was a kindergartner, her little class was out there in their dresses and their flags and their sailor hats welcoming Mrs. Bush when she landed in Air Force. I think it was Air Force One. And it was so cute because they were just, you know, the teachers, everyone was just all just a flutter with excitement and like, ooh, it's a big deal when you see that plane land and they have everything partitioned off. And so it was really exciting, and the kids could just feel the excitement, and they started chanting, just spontaneously chanting different things. And what they were chanting when the plane landed and she started coming down the ramp was, "Welcome to America. Welcome to America." It was so funny. We all chuckled because it was actually her last state to visit. It was towards the end of their term, and it was the last state. And I thought, you know, America's unique. Every place is unique, but we are a special part of America, and it's neat when presidents take the time to come and see all the various different states and what they have to offer. And I think it's neat that Trump is coming to North Dakota. There's all kinds of theories about why he picked here, you know, because people like him in North Dakota, or there's Senate politics is the reason why he picked North Dakota. But he's coming here with an economic message and a tax cut message. And I think North Dakota is the poster child for the policies he's trying to promote. And so that's what I think is neat about why he's coming to America, because we don't just talk about balanced budgets. We don't just talk about tax cuts and keeping spending low. We actually live those principles and have a long record going back several decades now of living those principles. And I think that that had to play into why he chose North Dakota, an energy-related business in North Dakota, to help drive home his message of the importance of tax cuts for growing our economy. So pleased, very pleased to be part of that and excited to be part of it. And I hope everything goes off without a hitch and that it's a safe and enjoyable event for the community. One other quick thing, a separate aside. I was in Grand Forks yesterday at the ERC, and had some meetings with our former colleague, Brian Kalk, and I got to, during those meetings, tour his office. And I have pictures to prove not one single bison item in the office anywhere. It's all UND. I have the pictures to prove it.
Well, wait a second. When I
will be sending them around.
Several months ago, he had all of these photos, picture frames, backwards up against the wall. And I asked him, why are they, what are they, and you know, haven't you cleaned this out? Was this a storage room before you arrived? He said, no, it's my bison pictures, frame pictures. And I asked, well, why are they on the floor, and why are they pointed toward the wall? And he kind of paused and said, I'm still on probation. True story. So, wow. So they're not, that's very
they've been cleaned out.
Very disappointing.
That's it for me, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for indulging me in a little long storytelling.
Okay, well, moving right along, we'll move to the consent agenda. There are six items on the consent agenda plus the previous meeting minutes. I move approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And it was a good thing I had that consent agenda, because I do not have anything in my
portfolios. Slacker.
So we'll move to Commissioner Crosius.
All right. Thank you. First item, I move the commission adopt the order on settlement to Northern States Power Company 2013 electric rate increase application case number PU-12-813.
Second.
On April 21st, 2017, Northern States Power Company filed a miscellaneous tariff compliance filing to discontinue providing outage credits to customers affected by multiple outages in North Dakota. On June 15th, 2017, a settlement agreement was filed whereby the company agreed to extend its reliability performance plan, including outage credits to customers through 2017. On June 30th, 2017, the Commission issued a notice of opportunity for hearing, which was provided until August 31st, 2017, for receiving written comments and hearing requests. No responses to the notice were received. Just a little bit of background. This has been going on now for several years. The company's average annual number of outages per customer in 2016 was 0.91, which was higher, slightly higher than the four previous years that has been tracked. And in the 2016 annual report, it stated that underground cable is still the major reason for the outages. Due to the fact that the outages have not decreased in terms of frequency, and having considered the matter, the commission finds the settlement is reasonable and should be adopted, and that is to extend the refunds if a customer has more than three outages within the calendar year through 2017. And as a part of the order, the settlement agreement filed on June 15th, 2017, a copy of which is attached to this order and made a part of this order, is approved. And NSP shall file a compliance tariff with the $50 bill credit for customers experiencing multiple interruptions within 10 days, showing the credit is available for the calendar year 2017.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I've always thought that a part of, hopefully, as we live our lives and gain wisdom, that part of that is being able to recognize that sometimes your predecessors had good ideas. I think this was one of them, and so I'm glad to see it continuing on. And the 2013 doesn't sound like such a long time ago, but or 2012, I mean. But actually, that precedes any of the current commissioners now. But it's an area where I think our predecessors did have a very good plan moving forward, and improvement has been made. But I think more can be achieved.
I agree. This plan really has been an important expression to the community throughout the years where they've been having these outages, that we're watching it, the company's watching it, they're on guard for certain numbers, and there's some goals here for improvement. And when they aren't reaching those goals, then there's some payment back to the customers. And so I think it's been a really important tool for showing customers that we're serious, the company is serious, and that they're going to be compensated when they have outages that last, or more frequent outages than what we deem to be appropriate. And I think that extending it through this year while the company finishes replacing that unjacketed cable, which is the culprit of a lot of these outages, really, I think, gives us a chance to look at the before and after, and hopefully after this year is up, we'll see those numbers starting to taper off. And if not, we'll, you know, continue talking with the company about it and seeing what else might be done.
Is there further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right. I move the commission adopt the order on interim rate increase. Our interim rates in Montana Dakota Utilities Company, a division of MDU Resources Group Incorporated, 2017 natural gas rate increase, application case number PU-17-295.
Second.
On July 21st, 2017, Montana Dakota Utilities Company, a division of MDU Resources, filed with the commission to increase its rates for natural gas service. On August 16th, 2017, the commission suspended the rates. On August 29th, 2017, commission advocacy staff filed comments stating that MDU's interim rate increase complies with the laws regarding interim rate increases. MDU's rate increase is based on a projected 2018 test year and is an increase in annual revenue collections of $5.9 million or an overall increase in retail revenues of 5.4%. The interim increase is $4.6 million or an overall increase in revenue collections of 4.2%. When applied to the non-fuel portion of the bill, the effective increase to firm service customers is 12.486%. The monthly increase for a residential customer is approximately $2.44. The interim increase amount will be shown as a separate line item on a customer's bill. Under North Dakota Century Code Section 49-05-06, a company filing for a rate increase is entitled to an interim rate increase. The commission finds that MDU's interim rate increase complies with the laws regarding interim rate increases. In the event the interim rate increase amounts collected by MDU are in excess of final rates approved by the commission, MDU is required to refund the excess under North Dakota Century Code Section 49-05-06, including interest, at a rate to be determined by the commission. The order would include Montana Dakota Utilities' request for interim rate increases, or interim rates to increase annual revenue collections by $4.6 million, and interim rates to be effective for service rendered on or after September 19th, 2017. And had a few more bullet points to share. Or maybe I don't. I may have. Just as a point of reference, the monthly service charge right now for MDU customers is $19.60. This would increase it to $22.58. So the average residential customer overall is at $2.98 per month in terms of the increase amount, which would bring it to just shy of $36 annually at $35.78. So the two groups that are going to be impacted by this, one would be the residential, and the other would be firm general, although for both residential and the commercial firm general segment would be considered firm customers. The interruptible service customers, the transportation customers, would not see an increase, nor would the Air Force service for the Minot Air Base. That would not see an increase either. So this increase is to, essentially it's for capital investment in pipeline replacement projects to enhance safety and integrity of the natural gas system that MDU distributes gas through, as well as a portion to of the increase is for additional costs in operating and maintaining the system overall. So that is something, you know, in terms of the overall request. Again, the interim rates under Century Code, that is something the company is entitled to, but staff will be taking a very close look at this proposal, as will I, and I know everyone else will be taking a close look. So, you know, more to come as we proceed through the case, and the goal always is to make sure that we have the right balance between what customers pay in terms of service and also ensuring that the company itself remains healthy and viable as also an employer and a business that operates in the state. So we'll do our best, as always, to come up with the right balance on this.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the Commission acknowledge Montana Dakota Utilities Company, a division of MDU Resources Group Incorporated's request to withdraw its application for a peak rewards program and cost recovery mechanism tariff, and close the case in Montana Dakota Utilities Company, a division of MDU Resources Group Incorporated, peak rewards program and cost recovery mechanism tariff, tariff and rates, case number PU-17-319.
Second.
Okay, and while this is being withdrawn at this time, just a little bit of color, our background on this. The Peak Rewards Program was to function or would function as an AC cycling program that utilizes programmable Wi-Fi thermostats that would control a customer's air conditioning during times of peak demand on the system or in the case of an emergency situation. The proposal had included thermostats made by three different manufacturers from a low of $100 to a high of $200. The customer would have received a $60 credit back on the thermostat purchase, plus they would also receive a $10 monthly credit for being enrolled in the program during the months of June through September. Again, it's been withdrawn at this time, but my understanding, this is something that is in place in other states, and I'm quite sure as we proceed forward we'll see more things of this nature being presented, but at this time it has been withdrawn.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Brian, I was surprised to see this was withdrawn. Do you have any, can you provide any insight as to why, or are they going to fold it into something else? Or
it's the in terms of where they would free up the power, my understanding is that, and while I don't, haven't been able to, at least through the documents, find which two major customers, I believe there are several customers that They have worked with instead at this point in time to free up power during peak demand periods. Okay. So in terms of going back to trying to collect enough on the consumer side to free up that power again during peak demand, that they're going to work with two larger customers and so commercial customers instead. But I anticipate that they'll circle back on this. But again, that's speculation on my part. It's really up to the company in terms of making that decision.
Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, and for my last one, I move the commission close Public Service Commission, North Dakota Telephone Company, damage prevention enforcement case, number PU-17-330.
Second.
On August 17th, 2017, a North Dakota one-call complaint was received from Mark Matheny with Spirit Lake Casino and Resort, alleging that North Dakota Telephone Company violated the North Dakota Century Code, Chapter 49-23, one-call excavation notice system law by failing to locate and mark its underground facility within 48 hours. Staff investigation found that on June 22, 2017, Spirit Lake placed a locate ticket for water service repairs. On that same day, North Dakota Telephone Company marked their underground facilities on the property as requested. And then on July 6, 2017, while excavating for a storm service line, Spirit Lake hit a 48-strand fiber optic cable that was not marked. NDTC was contacted immediately and came to the site to investigate. It was determined at that point in time that the fiber optic cable was owned by Spirit Lake Casino and not North Dakota Telephone Company. So, in effect, since this is a privately owned underground facility, it is not required to be located or locatable by law. And North Dakota Telephone Company has no obligation or had no obligation at the time to locate it. Staff did work with both parties who are in agreement that there was no violation to the North Dakota one-call law. And based on the investigation, staff does not intend to file a formal complaint and recommends that no further action be taken and that the case be closed.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Mr. Fedorchak.
All right, I have just two items, both of them related to Glacier Ridge Wind Farm. The first one, I move the commission adopt the order denying hearing request in Glacier Ridge Wind Farm LLC, Glacier Ridge Wind Farm Project Barnes County Siting Application Case Number PU-16-539.
Second.
Just to kind of recap a little bit of the history on this one. So this wind application came in last summer of 2016. We had the public hearing on this entire project. 300, it was a proposed 300.15 megawatt wind energy conversion facility. We had that hearing on September 27th of 2016. The hearing was on the entire project. And then in December of that year, Glacier Ridge filed a motion to amend the application to separate that into two phases, phase one and phase two, and then further requested that we approve phase one and hold in abeyance a decision on phase two. On December 17th, the commission did issue a finding of fact, conclusion of law, and order for phase one of that Glacier Ridge wind farm. Then in January, the company requested that we lift the stay in respect and provide approval for phase two of the project. We looked through all that. Well, that was during the transition time when we were just down to two commissioners. And so that sort of – this was one of the things that just was put on hold until we were full staff, full steam ahead. Once Brian got up and running, then we kind of relooked at this. So then in May – we issued a notice of opportunity for hearing, setting a deadline of June 23rd for written comments and requests for a hearing on that issue of phase two. We did get a request for a second hearing filed by Ms. Shirley Stark of the Rural Valley City. And she stated concerns related to noise, light pollution of the night skies, and visual pollution of the landscape. And she said that she'd not been aware of the September 27th hearing. So then on June 29th, Glacier Ridge filed a response to that request for a hearing, basically saying that the notice was properly performed for the September 27th hearing, that Ms. Stark lives about 3 miles southwest of the already approved Phase 1 project boundary and approximately 10 miles from the proposed Phase 2, which is at issue in this second phase, and that they asserted that a fully developed hearing record regarding noise, light, and visual effects already existed, and that Ms. Stark didn't raise any additional concerns, anything new, material concerns that were not addressed at the original hearing. We had a work session on this issue, consulted with our attorneys, and so having considered the request for the hearing, we find this motion shows, or this order shows, that the commission finds that the facts and issues contained in Ms. Stark's request for a hearing were considered and addressed by the commission at the properly noticed September 27th public hearing, and that a second hearing on facts and issues that were already presented to the commission at the September 27th public hearing would be duplicative and inefficient, and thereby we deny the request for a second hearing.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, motion is approved.
Okay, thank you, Daryl. I move commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order designating a site for Phase 2 in Glacier Ridge Wind Farm LLC, Glacier Ridge Wind Farm Project, Barnes County, citing application case number PU-16-539.
Second.
Thank you, Brian. So I won't go through all the procedural history in terms of when we did what, but we did have the hearing and all that. So now we're looking at Phase 2, which was covered during the original hearing for the entire project in September 27th of last year. So we issued the certificate for Phase 1, which was for up to 52 turbines plus 3 alternate turbines, totaling a total of 179.4 megawatts of generating. Phase 2 will add 35 turbines to the project. That's an additional 120.75 megawatts and 9 proposed alternate turbine locations in Phase 2. So for a total of 12 alternate locations for the entire project. Together, Phase 1 and Phase 2 will consist of 87 turbines and 12 alternates for a total of up to 300.15 megawatts. Glacier Ridge expects to use Vestas V126 3.45 megawatt turbine generators for both Phase 1 and Phase 2. They anticipate that the cost of Phase 2 is $173 million, with the total project cost estimated at $375 million. So just like as is in Phase 1, Phase 2, they've examined all the natural resources issues and impacts, including wildlife, protected species, critical habitats, wetlands, water bodies, vegetation, and soil types. They've examined through both cultural resource desktop studies and field studies the 1 mile and 2 mile areas for archaeological resources and architectural resources, and field studies they have completed on the entire Phase 2 footprint. Glacier Ridge conducted eagle and avian use studies, raptor nest surveys, bat acoustic modeling for Phase 2. They've committed to a number of steps to mitigate the impact of Phase 2, including minimizing under 30 hours the shadow flicker to occupied residences, noise within 100 feet of an occupied residences will be under 50 decibels dBA, or unless they sign a waiver, and they have the setbacks that they're committing to. The nearest distance from a non-participating residence is 1,966 feet, and they are 541 feet or more from the property lines of all non-participating landowners as required by our rules. So Glacier Ridge will have a supervisory control and data acquisition system installed for both Phase 1 and 2, which will allow turbines to be continuously monitored and controlled at a control center in Broomfield, Colorado. They have obtained all the land rights necessary to construct Phase 1 and Phase 2, and they will file a decommissioning plan with the Commission for review and approval prior to the operation of either Phase 1 or Phase 2. And they will fully comply with North Dakota Administrative Code, including all financial assurances required by the Commission and through our rules. Subject to FAA approval and in accordance with the state law, Glacier Ridge will also install a light mitigating technology system by December 31st of 2019 or by the commercial operation date, whichever is later. So with that, we've examined all the environmental, cultural resources, impacts to residences associated with this project to provide for the standards for orderly development. And I think this project has strong support from the community. It was community-driven from the beginning. They still have some items to complete. They don't have their interconnection agreement. I don't think they have a purchaser for the power. But it's been the Commission's practice in the past, and I think it's appropriate that we look at all the environmental issues and say if you construct it under these terms and under these conditions, it meets the standards of state law. And so our permit covers all of those issues. It's up to them to find the market participants in the interconnection agreement, and if they can't, then the project won't be constructed. But if they construct it under, in the way that we have outlined here, it meets the requirements under state law, and I think it's appropriate for them to receive the permit now and have that in completed so that they can move forward and try to address some of the other issues to bring this project into fruition.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Well, as you recall from 9 months ago, I did do a dissenting opinion to the first phase of Glacier Ridge. I expressed concern about the uncertainty involved with this application, and the developers have now acquired the easements necessary for the collection lines and access roads, but I still do maintain some apprehension about the project. But despite that apprehension, I guess I figure the solution to uncertainty is not more uncertainty. This commission did issue a certificate of site compatibility for much of the project area for Glacier Winds. The developer has already begun construction, and constraining the project at this time, I think, could jeopardize the enterprise that the part they've already started has no clear reclamation plan. And so I am going to support this part because it's already in progress.
Wind development is one of the things that I'm just shy of 6 months on the commission right now, and it's 20th is my anniversary, so I think that means I have to bring donuts. But I'm learning the ropes here. So
I like it.
So, but one of the things when I've been traveling around, and I've been able to get around quite a bit when I'm not at the desk. Of course, we're working out in the public as much as we can. So during my travels, I get a lot of questions about wind development, and. Everything from those who are certainly proponents of wind development to those who have concerns about wind development because of the impact that it might have on our coal baseload facilities that are located in the state. And I understand that you have, I think that the term beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. Sometimes neighbors that are in proximity to wind farms aren't nearly as excited as the landowner themselves, who gains from a monetary standpoint, but the communities do support them It's a boon to their financial situation in terms of school districts. And I would go back to an earlier comment that was made. Does this follow the law in terms of being eligible to be cited and approved? And really that is what we have to look at as a commission when we get into, is it orderly development? I believe it is. And the other part is we don't always know who the buyers of product are when we look at other entities such as a natural gas processing plant, for example. We may not know who the end buyer is, but we look at, do they meet the environmental requirements? Do they meet the archaeological requirements in terms of, is there any sensitive material within the site? And we take a look at all of those things. And our job as commissioners is to follow the rule of law, and I believe everything appears to be proper in that standpoint. So I understand both sides of the argument, but at the same time, is this being done properly? And from everything that I can see, it is.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And that concludes my portfolio, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. The announcements will be rather brief, too, here. There was at least one thing that I wanted to point out. Oh, on our calendar, up until the last couple days, we had a grid security discussion scheduled for 1:30 this afternoon. That has been moved to 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. And then Wednesday, September 13th, a week from today, at 10:30, down in Ashley, North Dakota, at the City Hall, we will have a siting application hearing on the Maricourt Wind Power Project. That's case number PU-08-932. That is the one you may recall was scheduled for late June, and there was a problem with one of the public notices in one of the two county papers down there, and so it had to be delayed. But that is what's up for next Wednesday. That'll be all I have for announcements. With that, we will stand in recess for questions from the press. We'll follow that with about a 5-minute or so break to sign some orders and such, and then we will reconvene with the administrative portion of the meeting.
Could the commission provide an update on the settlement negotiations with Energy Transfer?
The Hurricane Harvey has really impacted the company, and I believe there isn't any update to provide at this point. Our attorneys have been in conversation with theirs, but there just isn't the staff for Dakota Access has been tied up with responding to and recovering from Hurricane Harvey, and so we'll just be waiting patiently until they can get their feet back on the ground and get back to us.
Did that put a stop to negotiations, or are they still ongoing?
I don't know if it's a stop or not. I think that our attorneys are kind of still talking, but I don't know that they've had a chance to get any conversations going with all the players.
I just wanted to clarify a couple things. The Glacier Ridge is over 300 megawatts. That's not the largest wind farm, or is it?
Well, this is always a tricky question, Dave, because it would have been, if we had done it all at one fell swoop, the largest approved at one time. But the Bison Wind Project out here west of Bismarck is, what, 600 megawatts, Jerry? Or close to, in 3 or 4 phases. Yeah, so it's a distinction that I don't know merits continue to make, because there's larger wind farms that are approved in multiple phases operating kind of right next to each other.
It certainly is among the large And if you combine this, and I guess in my mind I look at this as one, you know, most of them have been 100 or 150 megawatts or maybe 200. And so this is certainly a large undertaking.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Crosius, I'm sorry. Believe it or not, that was my first cup of coffee today, which does not happen. Normally, that's my second pot. Today I tried to cut back on coffee, probably not doing that for a while again. So I just wanted to double-check and to clarify the natural gas rate increase. What was the original proposal that MDU put together?
In terms of the...
The original rate increase application?
It is in terms of dollar amount that they're requesting, or
what it would mean for customers.
Okay, what it would mean for customers, for the average residential customer, it would be an increase of $2.98 per month.
And this is based solely on fixed costs.
Capital investment. Correct, capital investment and pipeline replacement projects, and then. Largely, but also a portion would be the increased cost to operate and maintain their system as well.
But the $2.98 is not necessarily per like a usage thing?
No, this is off of the monthly charge, so it's not connected to the fuel charge at all. It's just on the base fee, the monthly charge, if you will.
The clarification is the piped into the house to provide the service, pretty
much. No.
Yes.
You're talking from curb to meter, or are you talking
I think you just meant
distribution.
The cost to provide the service to the house. Yeah.
Yeah.
The fixed cost.
Oh, to the house, not what they're replacing.
No.
Oh, right. Correct. Yes.
I've got it.
Okay.
And in terms of NSP, then it's calendar 2017 when that ends?
Correct. That will be through 2017 that it would be scheduled to end, and similar to what just occurred, staff Sarah Cardwell has been keeping a very close eye on this, and we'll again see where they are at in terms of frequency of outages and is there a need to continue the program or not, but that's a determination that we'll make at the end of once we get through 2017, we'll see what where they're at overall. At the end of the day, it's about providing more reliable service to the customers. And everybody knows what happens when you have a power outage. Nowadays, we live in such a highly electronic world. How many clocks do you have to reset? And everything's blinking in the house. And a long-term outage, of course, can cause more problems.
Dave, if I might go back one quick second to the MDU rate case. I haven't read all of the materials that they've applied, but I did read enough of the summary information to find it interesting that one of the major drivers for the case is this new safety system safety and integrity program to replace a lot of the older aging infrastructure, and it's really part of a kind of a national effort by natural gas utility providers to upgrade those aging systems and get rid of the ones that are the most likely to cause problem, the highest risk stuff, the vintage steel, plastic, and low pressure systems. That's what MDU is looking at here. So that is something that, while customers hate to see a rate increase, it's really important that the system in place is as safe as possible and that we don't have any of the, you know, accidents that have occurred in other locations around the country that have been really serious for some of the residential customers, large explosions, et cetera.
One more question on DAPL, if I may. If there's no resolution by the October 3rd and 4th hearing, will that be the end of negotiations on all the issues, or how would that play out?
I think it's too premature to say much about what happens next. I think we just need to stay focused here on the negotiation process and see how that unfolds and what we can get done through that process, and then evaluate what needs to be done if we don't solve it all through that process.
Yeah, I agree. That would be speculative, but I would say, based on visiting with legal counsel, that I'm encouraged by what I believe is decent progress and good progress in the case overall. So, and that's what we're trying to get to. At the end of the day, when you think about the amount of the fine, that's one component. I would argue it's a smaller component in the overall scheme of things. When you think of the visibility factor, and what is this about? This is about affecting future behavior in a positive way. So when more pipelines are constructed in our state, that the rules and the regulations that we want companies to follow and adhere to are indeed followed. So I don't know if you could make this any more public, and it's not just for Energy Transfer Partners, Dakota Access, but it's for all operators. Everyone is watching this. So I would say from an awareness standpoint, you really can't begin to even quantify just the positive aspects of having this conversation. So that's really what I'm personally look at is, in the future, can we mitigate or even eliminate things of this nature so we're not having these discussions and that the infrastructure is built out and we skip this step, if you will. So, I'm encouraged at the direction that we're going, and again, it's been a very high-profile situation, so I think that holds far more weight than the settlement amount or what was originally the proposed fine. You know, we're now moving to a settlement amount.
James, I want to add something to that, though, that I think should be the key takeaway for people who are watching this process take place. When that hearing got rescheduled, it went from a one-day hearing to a two-day hearing. And that two-day hearing, we've got a busy staff that all the ones that would be involved in this, their schedules are revolving around that, and that has not come off the schedule yet. So it's still on there. So to me, that's the message.
I think that's the first time I've ever been mistaken for James.
Oh.
Do not tell him, Blake. Under any Blake? Circumstances.
I'm often mistaken for Dale Wetzel.
So. I believe that. I believe that.
You're much nicer than Dale.
And I apologize for that, Blake. I did not mistake the two of you. I said the wrong name, and I goofed up.
You're more polite, I should say.
One last question. I'll let the issue die. One of the reasons for my previous question, I'm wondering if, I mean, we might have a situation where we have a public hearing on the tree and soil issue at the same time that private attorney negotiations are going on.
Well, we can always extend that hearing again if we feel like we're making great progress. I mean, we're not going to jeopardize productive negotiations on a settlement agreement that could do bet more than what you could do through a hearing with throwing a hearing in the middle of it. So we'll just evaluate that at the time.
So it would be likely that if negotiations are still going on, that hearing would...
If they're being productive.
Okay. Thank you.
And Blake, I don't have anything to add to that. I just wanted to redeem myself by saying...
Thank you.
Is that it?
Okay. Anything else? Okay, we'll take a little break and sign some orders here.